ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's hard to get your loved ones to change their habits, let alone change world history. But that's exactly what happened with apartheid.
And a demonstrator has run right through the play.
Australians and millions of others took a stand and helped to bring the racist South African regime to its knees. I'm Sesonke Msimang, and join me for Boycott, the fight to end apartheid. ABC Rewind, Boycott. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Almost everything you hear about economics on radio and television and on podcasts, certainly on this one, treats inflation and unemployment as opposites. You can have a lot of inflation or a lot of unemployment, but you can't have a lot of both. If inflation is too high, you can whack it down by pushing up interest rates, but you'll push unemployment up. If unemployment is too high, you can whack it down, but you'll push inflation up. It's like a seesaw. But what if it stops working and unemployment and inflation climb together? It can happen. It did happen during the great oil crisis in the mid-1970s.
And we're beginning to hear this term, stagflation.
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 Stagflation, which is where prices continue to increase, inflation is high, but growth and employment remain stagnant.
It couldn't happen again, could it? Welcome to The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and my guest this week, someone who was a leading Australian economist as stagflation took off during the mid-1970s and who later served on the Reserve Bank Board through another tumultuous time, Professor Bob Gregory of the Australian National University, and someone who's made stagflation something of a specialty during his time at the ABC, business and economics reporter Gareth Hutchins. Welcome, Gareth, and welcome, Bob.
Hi.
Thanks, Peter.
Bob, I want to see it through your eyes. Back then, before the mid-1970s, before stagflation, unemployment was contained below 7%, often below 5%, and unemployment rarely exceeded 2%. Then suddenly, both doubled. What did you think at the time? Did you even think it was possible?
It was possible, and people sort of knew it was possible, and it had sort of happened for a little short period, so nobody really noticed. What was special at that time was the degree to which unemployment increased and the degree to which inflation increased. Everybody was shocked by how big the changes were on both sides, the unemployment side and the inflation side.
I remember listening to economics lectures in 1975. I'd just been told that unless governments got things right, they'd either get high unemployment or high inflation, but not both. And I was thinking, have you people looked outside? Have you read the newspapers? Is that what it was like at universities, at the government, in the Reserve Bank?
They watched the data week by week, month by month. So they knew what was going on, but nobody knew the speed and the size of the change. And
that's inflation the thing that really jumped to 17.7%.
Yeah, it was unthinkable.
Unemployment jumped
unthinkable
from 2% to 5.4%. Was the government initially frozen, not knowing what to do?
They didn't quite know how to fix it because there was no quick fix. I mean, one thing they did is they tried to intervene in the price level itself. So there was a short period there, for example, where we fixed the price of steel. And I was involved in that. And, of course, that didn't make much difference. They cut tariffs by 25% to try and make imports cheaper and get the price level down through that mechanism. And that didn't have that much impact either.
They tried a referendum, didn't they, that would have given the government the right to mechanically control wages and prices to stop them rising. Australians said no, but the Prime Minister, Gough Whitlam, urged Australians to vote yes.
You can ensure that pension increases and the savings of people on fixed incomes have real value. You can ensure that the new wage today needn't mean inflated prices at the supermarket tomorrow. You can ensure that all incomes, not just wages, will be subject to fair and equal scrutiny.
Gareth, like most Australians alive today, you weren't conscious in the 1970s, so you missed that unusual time.
I missed the fun.
Do you regard it as an aberration, something so unusual it couldn't happen again?
No. I've always regarded it as being tied to that period, the 1970s, but there's no reason why it couldn't happen again. It's just that if it were to happen again, we'd just have a different experience of it. Firstly, because we've already experienced it, so we know that it can happen and can happen to a big degree. Secondly, because our labour market institutions have changed so much since the 1970s that it would happen differently.
Back then, we got wage increases every quarter in order to keep pace with prices that were increasing massively every quarter.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was a builder in the 70s, 80s and 90s. I asked him once what his experience of stagflation was in the 70s. He said he hardly noticed it because his pay packet increased every 3 months. But then I asked my mum what her experience was, and she said, well, he's not the one who had to handle the household budget.
What's the sequence of events around the world, Bob, that led to inflation and unemployment doubling? What caused it? And you mightn't have known at the time, but looking back on it, you'd certainly know.
Yeah. Well, if you look back at the Australian data, the extraordinary thing is the degree to which real wages start to increase from the mid-60s to 1974. We get nominal wages increasing faster, much faster than prices. So real wages go up. If you look back at the data now, it looks as though between the 8 years, say 66 to 74, that real wages went up by about 50% for male full-time workers.
My gosh.
That's huge. That's huge. And so what effect does that have? Well, for example, the national income share of wages goes from about 49% to 60%. A huge increase.
It's basically profits is a small amount and wages became a much bigger amount.
Exactly. But profits try and claw things back. And so all of a sudden, prices start going up faster and faster. After the Depression in the 1930s, unions were very, very careful about wage increases. And I just think that effect gradually wore out as time went by.
Just quickly, Peter, there were a couple of court cases, though, weren't there in the late 60s, early 70s, to introduce equal pay for women?
Yes.
And that had a big impact.
Yes. The real wage for women went up 30% compared to men. But the male real wage was the biggest effect, not percentage-wise, but the fact that there were more men working than women, right? Mm. So the women got the biggest real wage increases, but the main effect came through the male labour market because there were more men working.
Neither of you are talking as if it was the oil crisis, and there was an oil crisis that caused it.
No, the oil price tipped it further up. The oil price made things very much worse. And so that was the big tipping point that just got things completely out of hand.
What pushed up the unemployment rate? It's not immediately obvious to me that this ever-increasing inflation and the high prices from oil that fed into it would have pushed up the unemployment rate.
Well, there are two arguments. One is the real wage itself, right? If you're an employer and you're paying workers $10 an hour and it suddenly goes to 20, then you start laying off workers, right? And that can only be offset if you get big productivity increases. And what happened in that time period is the productivity increases did not increase at the same rate as real wages. So you get the real wage problem.
Is that partly because of what happened to the price of oil? Because it was actually getting hard to make things.
Oil price effect is partly that. And it's partly that it comes as a shock to everybody in terms of profits and wages, right? All of a sudden, real wage would fall, other things being equal, because gasoline prices go up. Employers find their costs go up. And so they all start to adjust in various ways. And the adjustment basically at the employer side leads to higher unemployment.
Could it happen again this time, Gareth, in this oil crisis? Things are different in other ways. Might we get, though, both high inflation and high unemployment together, or almost together?
I think we could, because if you wanted to kick off stagflation in multiple countries at once, the first thing you'd do would be to bomb the oil and gas industries in the Middle East and completely damage the global energy system. That's what we're seeing right now. We hope that the war ends tomorrow, but the longer it goes on, the greater the chances of the energy system just being completely damaged. And then you've got that whole shock that we have to deal with here.
Yeah, so I'm going to be a bit stronger than that. I think it will happen and is happening. So I'm saying that what we're going to see going ahead is inflation's going to go up a little bit and unemployment's going to go up. So we are going to get stagflation. I think it's guaranteed. I think the main mechanism that people will see is interest rates going up. The question, though, is how big is the stagflation going to be? And nobody at this point is thinking of anything like the 1970s.
We're not going to see inflation of 17%.
Nobody's thinking that. But let me go to something that Gareth has said. It depends on how long the oil price increase lasts. If it's a temporary thing, then the bank won't respond to it, really. You know, they'll say, well, we'll just let it work its way through and it won't matter much. But if it goes on for a long time, and that becomes not temporary, then all of a sudden people will start adjusting. Right? And if you read the Treasurer's speech last week, he's sort of well aware of that, and they're doing model simulations in Treasury which give you both higher unemployment and higher inflation in the next 2 or 3 years. But so far, the extent to which inflation is going up and the extent to which unemployment is going up are reasonably moderate. And so it all depends on how long this oil price increase lasts. That's the big judgment to be made now.
I suppose there are lessons for how to deal with it from how we got out of stagflation last time. That's what we're about to examine here on The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and Bob Gregory, a former member of the Reserve Bank Board, and ABC business and economics reporter Gareth Hutchins. Bob, you were on the Reserve Bank Board as we tried to get Australia back to an even keel during the 1980s. How did you manage to bring unemployment down while containing inflation through that decade?
Well, the most important instrument we had at that time was, you know, we had fiscal policy, which we've got now, monetary policy, which we've got now, but we had a centralised wage-fixing system. And basically, the trade union movement and the Labor government got together and they did the following deal. The government said to the trade union movement, look, we will guarantee your current real wage. Right? You don't have to worry about what in future inflation will be. We will guarantee your current real wage because we will index it. If prices go up 10%, we'll increase your wages by 10. If prices go up by 20, we'll increase your wages by 20. That means that they didn't have to guess anymore about what inflation would be. And the problem at the beginning of that period is their guesses of inflation were much higher than the actual level. And therefore, they were negotiating wage increases on their guesses rather than the actual inflation rate.
And this was called the Accord.
This
was the Bob Hawke trade union movement, Bill Keelty, who was on the Reserve Bank Board with you. This was the deal. We will look after you, not only by wage increases, but also by things such as Medicare and tax cuts and so on.
Exactly. And this accord, you know, which you can study in detail in Australia, something like that, those things exist in Europe throughout the 60s and 70s. It's sort of called an incomes policy. And so we had an institutional structure that can do that. Our labour market's now changed. The main instrument that was used in that time is off the table. And now, this time around, all we've really got left is the old instruments of fiscal policy and monetary policy.
The Accord, though, frayed, did it, toward the end of the 80s, Bob. It became hard for unions to hold the line on wages. We saw inflation taking off again. What did you do? What did the Reserve Bank Board do as it seemed to be coming apart?
No, it was coming apart. It was coming apart. And the advice we were getting was that the parties to the accord, that is the union leadership, were finding it harder and harder to hold the workers in place. And so the bank was then sort of thinking to itself, well, when should we increase interest rates? Should we increase it early because we think the accord's going to fall apart? Or should we wait to see how bad the fall apart is? And basically, we decided to increase interest rates early. And so one of the criticisms that were made at the time when people looked at the actual outcomes, they said, well, inflation hasn't increased that much. You know, wages haven't increased that much. Why are you tightening up so much? And the answer was the bank thought, unless they did that, the outcomes would fall apart very, very quickly. And so
they kept doing it and brought on a recession.
Yeah, that's right. Well, then the other question becomes, there's no real argument about the direction of policy. Directions of policies are pretty easy to determine. What really is hard is how far do you go? And I was on the board at the time, and initially I thought unemployment would go to 7, but it became pretty clear because prices were not responding that quickly, that it was going to go higher. And so, you know, the effect on unemployment was very delayed, and there wasn't much increase in unemployment, so interest rates kept going up and up, and eventually we ended up with unemployment rates around 10. So what I want to stress is that the big arguments all the time amongst the elite, that is people who sort of, quote, know what's going on, is not really about the directions of policy. They're really about how far to go. There's a much more guessing, as it were, amongst elite people than you imagine. And that's what the fight's really about, how far to go. So I think we're going to have stagflation. We will tighten up interest rates. We will tighten up fiscal policy. But my guess is we won't go as far to create big increases in unemployment rate. But notice what I said. My guess is, again, I stress, there's no difference between me and the Treasurer and anybody else in terms of direction. The big problem is how far to go. And that's very difficult.
One victory you rescued from the ashes of what happened to unemployment was low and continuing inflation. Inflation was around 2.5%, has been broadly there ever since. Even given what's happened recently, on average, that inflation target has been met. Gareth, do you think that target is now at risk? On the face of it, the Treasurer is now talking last week about 5% inflation. It's looking as if that belief that the public seems to have, that prices don't rise much, is fraying.
It's a really interesting question, because can you imagine what would happen if Jim Chalmers was to come out tomorrow and to say, okay, we're lifting the inflation target to, say, 4 to 5%. The political pushback against that, he'd be accused of giving up on the inflation fight and everything. He would then have to, if he was to push ahead with that policy, try to explain to people that the most important thing is, as Bob has said before, is that if prices are just steady, so if they're around 4 to 5% but steady, so people can still plan and their plans aren't disrupted, then that would help us to really fight this thing. Whether or not the Reserve Bank would also be willing to go ahead with that, I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say two things about the inflation target area. The first thing is it has worked incredibly well. I mean, I was surprised at how well it worked. Inflation came down dramatically in Australia because we had high unemployment, but inflation rate did come down dramatically in Australia, came down all around the world. So up until recently, everybody believes the monetary targeting, inflation targeting is really a good thing. But when you look at what's actually happening now increasingly is that the bank is finding it harder to stay in the range. So then the question becomes, how long can you stay outside the range without the system fraying, as it were, right? And so I think looking ahead, the question of the targeting of inflation at 2.5 is going to become a big debating point. I think there are people around who say, well, the problem is we didn't get back to 2.5 quickly enough. People who say that are saying we need much higher interest rate increases and we're going to get more unemployment.
Unemployment at the moment is low, right? It's 4.3%. That's in a time frame of the last half century, that's low.
Yeah. So there was a view, maybe say 3 or 4 years ago, that the lowest level of unemployment was probably about 6.5 or 6, right? And then what's happened over the last decade maybe is the estimates of what that unemployment rate should be have been coming down. People start to say, well, you know, maybe we can get by with 5.5 and hold our target. And then people have started to say, well, maybe we can get 4.5 and hold our target. And about 2 or 3 years ago, when you looked at the labour market and what's going on there, people have been saying, well, maybe we can get down to 3.5 and hold our target. So there has been a debate about whether unemployment could go to 3.5 and still hold our inflation target. That debate's now over. It's now over. So what the debate now is about is, well, can we hold it at 4.5 or does it have to go higher? And a lot of people are thinking, well, maybe 5. I don't think there's any doubt that unemployment rate's going to go up. And I think myself that it's going to go towards 5. But how far past that is the issue. Treasury seem to be thinking, in my view, as an outsider, I think they're thinking 5.
Gareth, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of Australians being out of work who wouldn't have been out of work as the unemployment rate rises. Do you, from where you're looking at it, and you've looked back at this over the last half century, do you see that's now almost inevitable? In other words, that we discovered what was as good as it gets, we got there, we did better than that, and now we're discovering that as good as it gets is nowhere near as good.
Yeah, if the scenario that Bob has painted for us turns out to be met, then we'll have to clearly have a discussion about how those people who are unemployed will survive, just because our unemployment benefits are not even at subsistence levels.
By the way, the last time we knew we were pushing Australians into unemployment, which was during COVID, we doubled the unemployment benefits temporarily because
we
recognised it was a policy induced. It was induced by lockdowns and all sorts of things.
Yep. Lifted hundreds of thousands of households out of poverty, like above the poverty line for a short amount of time, a few months I think it was. And then those payments were quickly taken away from them and they were pushed back into poverty. And it's much harder to find work these days. We don't have the Commonwealth Employment Service or something similar. They can very quickly find a job for you. So if we're going to go back to that situation where we have 5% more unemployment with 10% levels of underemployment, people who aren't paid subsistence levels, welfare payments, we have to talk about how we're going to care for those people.
Bob, how would being on the board now compared to the issues you faced getting out of stagflation the last time? The decisions facing the Reserve Bank Board and the Treasurer as he draws up the budget, more difficult than those you faced then?
I don't know. I found it very difficult, full stop, you know, because while the directions are pretty clear, the extent to which you move is not clear, and nobody wants to create unemployment, right? I think the key issue for the bank is not whether interest rates should go up or not. They're going to go up. The key issue for the bank is, in the past, I think they've adjusted pretty slow responses. They've tried to smooth things out, right? And so they talk about, oh, we'll get back to 2.5 in a certain amount of time, right? The amount of time you're going to get back to 2.5 inflation has been lengthening, and now it's lengthened dramatically. So the real issue for the bank now is, how fast do we want to go for 2.5? How much of an interest increase we're going to have? And I think, looking forward, there's going to be real debate about that. You know, there are going to be those who say, what we should really be doing is moving much faster. And if you move much faster, that means unemployment rate goes up quicker. And there'll be those who say, oh, no, you know, maybe we just keep going in the right direction. Oil price increases go away and maybe we're going to be sort of okay. So I think very much we are at a turning point, which the oil price has sort of made this turning point obvious to us all. I want to say one more thing, which, you know, I keep wanting to say. It's only 18 months ago or 2 years ago that this sort of conversation wasn't happening. People are still talking about, is 3.5 real or not? Can we do it? That's now off the table.
We had permanently won the battle, it seemed, to lower the floor under unemployment.
So that can stress, I think, what is important just to realise is how hard it is to know how far to go, because things do change. But currently it doesn't look good. And you can see that in the monetary policy statements of the bank when they start talking about how long it's going to take to get inflation down.
You'd hear it in the words of the governor. She said she didn't want to push the economy into recession. She hoped she wouldn't have to.
Yeah, well, I hope so too.
And that was a question of how fast you move, I suppose.
Yes, it is. And I hope so too. But the longer the oil price increase goes, the harder she's going to find it to achieve that hope.
Bob, you were one of the people who, not realising it as you were doing it, did help push the economy into recession.
Oh, no, I realised I was doing that. Let's be clear. I knew. Everybody on the board knew recession was coming. Everybody in the government knew recessions were coming. The only issue was how hard and how bad will it be? And I think most of us at the beginning didn't think it was going to be as bad as it turned out to be.
Before we go on what's turning out to be a historic program, certainly a program at a turning point at a historic time. Bob and Gareth, as is traditional on the program, anything to look out for in the days and weeks ahead? Gareth?
Well, Bob has kind of covered it off for me because I have been thinking a lot about what the RBA will be doing in terms of where they'll want to keep unemployment in these terms. I was hoping it would be around 4.5, but if they're really going to go up to 5.5, again, we just want this war to end, though, don't we? Because it would settle a lot of people's problems.
Yeah. Bob, anything you're looking out for especially?
No, I just want to emphasise a key point, and that is that commentators and specialists overemphasise particular points. Right? They want to attract attention. And so you get the impression that the bank and the government are in control of things much more than they actually can be. So a lot of this stuff is out of our hands. It's out of our hands because the economy behaves in ways we don't know about, the oil crisis. Now, I haven't mentioned the silver bullet, and I use the word silver bullet consciously because silver bullets are hard to find, right? But the silver bullet for us is productivity increase. If we could miraculously get productivity increase, things would be much, much better.
We could afford wage increases.
Exactly. But productivity increases in the past have been slowing up. So one of the things you might ask me is, what has happened to Hamlet? And by that, I mean everybody else is talking about AI. Now, suppose that AI had a big productivity effect. Everybody's then focusing on job loss, right? But the other thing is, that means prices don't go up as much as they otherwise would do.
Relative to wages.
Yeah. And so the AI thing, which is completely unknown, is very, very interesting. Already we can see it in the sense that instead of unemployment going up in the US like we would have expected, investment in data centers is a big deal. Nobody talked about that a year ago. So AI illustrates, I think, a couple of things. One, how little we know, and two, it might have a big impact, not only on the jobs, which people are mainly focusing on, but it may have a big impact on productivity, which means that the real wage, nominal wage inflation outcomes all shift around.
Bob Gregory, I would like you back on the program to talk about productivity in the coming weeks and months. Bob is a former member of the Reserve Bank Board. Gareth Hutchins is the ABC's business and economics reporter. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
And thank you for listening. You can find our episodes on the ABC Listen app or live on ABC Radio National Thursdays. These are exciting times. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments, no economic question is stupid, you can email us. Rory has done that in Queensland. Rory asks, are you, me, I suppose, personally preparing for a recession? Rory, for what it's worth, I'm not. And that's because I have a lot of confidence in these people we've been talking about. The Treasurer with the budget coming up, the Reserve Bank. Australia's been something of a world expert at avoiding recession and handling things well. But we'll see. The address to write to us, theeconomy.stupid@abc.net.au. Thanks to our guests. Thanks to producer Hayley Crane. I'm Peter Martin. We'll see you next week.
ABC Listen, podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.